love this podcast? Support us by leaving us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit the link in the episode description to support us now. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Rolando, greatest action movie of all time. Go.
Ooh. Greatest action movie of all time. Shit. You've put me on the spot. I don't know. Greatest action movie of all time. What is one of my favorite action movies of all time?
Okay, think about it. Eddie, greatest action movie of all time. Go.
Oh, my God.
I know, right? Like, we're just being thrown on the spot. We hit record, and then next thing you know, it's just like, what's the greatest action movie of all time? Do you have an answer, Eddie?
No.
Ask me.
What's your greatest action movie of all time?
I think if I had to pick one, I would say Aliens, right? I mean, Aliens has
okay.
just got
yeah,
everything.
That's a good one.
I actually would go with Aliens.
Yeah, yeah. Aliens.
That's the one you're thinking?
The second one. Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, I think it's way better than Alien, too. Yeah.
Alien is, I think, a much more... I like Alien, but Aliens
it's a thriller,
is
a but
much
Aliens
more
is
fun.
Action. Oh, yeah. So much fun.
I was going to say Predator.
Okay. I think that's on a lot of lists of greatest action movies ever.
Yeah. And obviously the two came together to create Aliens versus Predator, which was one of my favorite game franchises. Not so much my favorite movies.
Really?
The movies are terrible, but the
games. I love the original Predator.
No. Alien versus Predator.
Oh, right. Sorry. Yeah.
Alien versus Predator, the movie franchise is complete doo doo. But the games are actually pretty phenomenal.
Okay. Well, you know, on list of greatest action movies, there's one movie that is always brought up, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I actually would vouch that this movie is going to start disappearing from that list because the subsequent sequels, I think, are so bad that they've actually affected the overall quality of the franchise and made people look back on the original film and look at it differently. And what else could we be talking about but The Matrix, guys? We're doing it. We're entering The Matrix this week. We're going to talk about the original film, really bypass Reloaded and Revelations, because this week it's all about Resurrections.
You've omitted the Animatrix.
And there's so much. First of all,
that's canon.
There's graphic novels. There's video. I mean, there's so much to this franchise. You know, it's crazy. We're just going to.
It is a pretty big Warner Brothers franchise. Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking Warner Brothers. Don't even get me started on Warner Brothers until we begin this episode. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Rolando.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About
unoriginality. All right, guys, happy New Year's. This is our first full episode of the brand new year, and we're going to kick off the new year by reminding you guys to please go and rate and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It really does help us out. And you know what? Tell your friends about us, because if they like movies, they might enjoy one of our random episodes and stuff. So I'm just leaving that out there for you guys. New year is going to be just a new year of us pushing that on you guys. So do it, please.
Yes, make our New Year's wish come true. And as always, we are joined by the lovely Eddie Z.
Hello, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. And what a happy New Year it is. So before we get into it, let's talk about some other things we've been maybe watching or reading or just been enjoying lately. I'll kick it off. I have been trying to watch as many of the, all of the good films that Hollywood or international films, they always come out at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So I've been like trying to watch as many as I can before some of these big award shows happen. Not because I like care, just because I want to have my own formed opinion. Really.
Yeah. Anything stand out?
I've watched so much. The most recent one I watched is The Lost Daughter with the Maggie Gyllenhaal film. Olivia Colman stars in it.
I don't know who that is.
You don't know Olivia Colman? She's a British, she's English actress. She won the Oscar for her role in The Favourite, which was a fantastic movie. Honestly, absolutely fantastic movie.
About lesbians.
Kind of, yeah.
Right? Aren't they lesbian lovers?
Yeah, I think it was. I don't know. It's about one of the queens of England and these two women who kind of vie for her affection and, you know, and the power that being in her good standing gives them. But it is also, you know, there is some like romance and all that stuff in here. It's a very good movie.
Okay.
Besides that, though, Olivia Colman, she's just great. And she gives one hell of a performance. And Maggie Gyllenhaal's directorial debut just felt so meditative.
Oh, what a big year for Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. And she seems, you know, she seems like a pretty cool gal. So
I actually Maggie Gyllenhaal?
Yeah, I do. Oh. I've heard stories about people who like worked on shows with her. She seems really nice.
Oh. Wait, we're talking about Jake Gyllenhaal's sister, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know why this was a big year for her, right?
Because she made her directorial debut.
Oh, no. Because Taylor Swift referenced her in one of her songs about the scarf that he left at her house.
Who's he?
Jake Gyllenhaal. They were dating. And what's it called? She left her scarf at Maggie's house.
Oh.
And is forever immortalized in one of Taylor Swift's burn songs about Jake Gyllenhaal. Oh,
that's why she had a big year. Not
that's her
she
big year. Yeah. I mean, talk about what an honor Taylor Swift sang about you.
So I mean, the film is also, you know, it's pretty raw and honest about how flawed people are. So you know, you might not enjoy some of the characters in it, but I think that's also what makes it so intriguing. So I would recommend The Lost Daughter. Absolutely. Olivia Colman might just win some awards for it, so we'll see. But
all right.
What about you guys?
I have been watching the second half of the new season of Pen 15. It dropped earlier. It dropped early in like mid-December. I didn't know about it. I just saw it. Pen 15 is one of my absolute favorite comedies, and I'm so sad it's the final chunk of it, right? Like the creators wanted to only do 2 seasons, and the shows are cringy funny. Like that's what makes it so good. And I think the actresses are just so, they're just, I mean, talk about wow. It's like having like 30-year-old actresses portrayed like children is not something new to me, because that happened a lot in like Hispanic television, right? Do you remember Chespirito?
No, but I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So in our household, we used to watch Chespirito, and these were like old men and old ladies, or middle-aged men. They looked old to me, playing like children, right? So it's not uncommon to me, and yet it's so wild to see it happening in like American culture, done to great effect, I think. And it's telling these really interesting coming-of-age stories. They're taking place in the 90s, so I relate to them in a way that, like, you know, only a gay guy can sometimes. It's one of my favorite shows. It's such a good comedy, for sure. That's been one of the things I've been watching.
That's cute.
Eddie and I have been watching that. But Eddie, do you have anything else that you've been like indulging in?
I am finishing up our book club book. The book club that me and Nicole are in.
Yeah, inside baseball talk here. But
yeah. The book is called The Golem and the Genie. And that is by Helena, right? Helene. I know I was going to get it wrong.
Helene.
Me too, yeah.
Helene. I've been calling her Helen, but Helene.
Me too.
Helene Wecker. And it's been a very fun read. We'll be meeting up to discuss that soon. But yeah, I highly recommend. It's like a historical fiction with a fantasy element. Basically, it's about like 2 displaced magical creatures in the 19th century. New York City.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. It sounds like a movie or TV show waiting to happen.
It definitely feels like a Netflix.
I can see it.
It does have that vibe, yeah. And not to like jump on Eddie's thing, but a golem is like a typical, you know, Jewish mythological creature, and a genie is, you know, like from Syria and that part of the world. And
Middle Eastern, yeah.
That collides, you know. So just seeing the cultural collision.
Well, Jewish is also Middle Eastern.
Yeah, but, you know, like historically speaking. You know,
right.
So. When, like mythologies in that sense, with the culture mythology.
Yeah.
But what's great about it too is it's also an immigrant story.
Yes.
I would get so jealous that you guys are in a book club, but you guys keep inviting me, and I just don't have the energy to read books. Like I don't have the energy to read books for a club. I feel like it's an assignment, and that's just like what turns me off to it. Does that make sense?
But you're part of a weekly movie
club. I know, and I'm constantly complaining about it.
Yes.
There you go. Touche. Well, there's also audiobooks, you know, so you can listen while you work. But all right, well, you know, then let's get into it. We are going to enter The Matrix this week, an episode that was kind of inevitable, really, if you think about it, especially with the way that Hollywood's going.
Well, yeah, I mean, The Matrix Resurrections.
Yeah.
He's complaining about it throughout the whole film.
Yeah, we'll get to that soon. So there are some years that Hollywood has that they just fucking get it right. And 1999 was one of those years where it was a great year for Hollywood. So I want to play a little game with you guys where I'm gonna give you an alphabetical order, 10 films. And I want you to tell me the top three highest grossing films of 1999 from this list of 10, okay?
Okay.
American Beauty, which was the Oscar winner.
I liked it.
Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me.
Loved it.
Notting Hill.
Never saw it.
I did.
Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant. Absolutely. Yeah. Awesome. Star Wars, Episode I, The Phantom Menace.
Saw it.
They didn't get it right with that one. Disney's Tarzan.
I don't think I saw that in theaters. I don't remember. I know I saw it in theaters. I saw it a lot on Disney Channel, right? Like it was the theme song, the Son of Man. That song? Son of Man by Phil Collins. I think it's Phil Collins, right?
It's Phil Collins, but Son of Man. Sing it
Son
again.
Son of Man. Is it Son of Man? That's the main theme of Tarzan.
How come you're doing Cher's voice?
I mean, the theme song is "You'll Be in My Heart," but then there's like "Two Worlds, One Family."
Oh, those are also good songs. No, "Son of Man" was the one they always played on Disney Channel.
I don't know Tarzan well enough to be able to, you know, say yes or no on this, so I'll leave it be.
I feel like "Son of Man" was the one that won the. Nominated for the Oscar, probably. I assume
it was
usually
when
Disney movie comes out.
It was.
Oh, was it?
That
song was so whack, though.
It was. That's why South Park was so upset that they lost to that song, that they ripped Phil Collins to shred in that one episode.
Yeah,
because they were not cool. All right, let's continue with the game. So Tarzan, The Matrix, The Mummy.
Oh my God! I mean, talk about a movie that needs. Oh wait, I guess it did come back. Not well though.
Yeah. The Sixth Sense.
Yeah, no.
The World Is Not Enough. And Toy Story 2. So, I want
Wait, Toy Story 2 came out in 1989?
Yes, it did.
Wow.
And I remember seeing it in theaters.
Mind-boggling. I can't believe that came out that long ago.
Yeah. So, what do you think were the top three, in order, highest grossing films of 1999?
Okay. The Matrix.
Was number...
I'm going to say... Probably number...
I feel like Star Wars was number one.
Yeah, I think Star Wars was number one. Matrix probably was number two. And I want to say The Mummy was probably number three.
Okay, so you're going one Star Wars, two Matrix, three Mummy?
Yeah.
Okay, you got one right. And that is Star Wars.
Okay, that makes sense. Oh, so...
highest grossing film was The Sixth Sense.
Okay, wow, for a horror movie.
Yeah, and the third was Toy Story 2, and The Matrix was only fourth highest grossing film of the year.
Only fourth? I mean, we're talking, this is, you just named like major blockbusters that people still talk about right now.
Yeah, so. But you were convinced it at least had the second spot, if not the first. And
I guess I was thinking, I guess I was underestimating, that's more me underestimating the appeal of Sixth Sense. Toy Story makes sense. I was actually going to put Toy Story in the top three, but I was thinking, like, no, probably the action movies, because nowadays action movies tend to dominate more so than, like, I think even the Pixar games.
Yeah, this is
right?
True.
So.
Yeah, true. I just want to say some of the other films that came out in 1999. Stanley Kubrick released his last film, Eyes Wide Shut. Pedro Almodovar with, you know, All About My Mother. The Iron Giant came out. The South Park movie came out. The Green Mile, Fight Club. Magnolia, yeah. Malkovich. I mean, it was a great fucking year for
Truly. Like, I guess, you know, when historians start looking, it's just like, yeah, the late 1900s did also produce some great movies also.
Yeah. Again, there's just some years where they get it right, and 1999 was one of them. So,
I guess they were all, like, you know, getting ready for that Y2K, so it's just like, we gotta release them, the world might end.
Yeah. So the Wachowskis were working on the Matrix script and pitching it as early as 1994. It took a while for people to say, yeah, we'll fund this movie and let you make it, you know, mainly because nobody really got it. It was a very complicated thing. Even the cast went on saying, you know, that they, at first, they didn't really know what to make of it and that they were required to read, like, Jean Baudrillard's Simulacra and Simulation because it was, like, you know, really high concept stuff. The film was actually presented even and pitched to Will Smith, and he turned it down because he didn't get it. He was like, I can't even follow, so no thanks.
Can you imagine, like, what the world seriously would be like if Will Smith, because I think Will Smith is so much hotter, I think, than Keanu Reeves. That was actually one of the reasons I actually never liked The Matrix, because I thought Keanu Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss are two of, like, they look like heroin addicts, in my opinion. And I never liked their whole style for these Matrix movies.
Oh, interesting.
The yeah, I was never...
Okay.
No, like, their fashion sense.
Oh, I see.
Like, yeah, literally yeah, their style. Like, not the style of the movie, but, like, their fashion sense. Like, those long leather jackets. Ugh.
Interesting.
Pass.
I mean, okay, we'll get to that in a second.
I'm so superficial.
Well, that's what The Matrix is all about. So, the president of Warner Brothers signed them up, the Wachowskis, for a two-picture deal. First, they made a movie called Bound with Gina Gershon and Jennifer Tilly playing lesbian lovers. And it's, you know, it's an interesting 90s movie, actually. I mean, when I was younger and I was discovering my lesbianism, I found this movie and I was like, oh, you know. I wonder how I would feel about it now, being a grown woman and all this stuff. But anyway, and then after the success of Bound, they were like, hey, can we make The Matrix now, please? And then it got greenlit.
I don't know what Bound even is.
Oh, yeah, you should check it out. Gina Gershon from mm-hmm. Showgirls fame, Jennifer Tilly from Chucky fame. Just think of the two of them making out, you know?
Okay.
Like, oh, that's all you, all right. That's all you really need.
I guess, yeah. I mean, that should sell to a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, so apparently, you know, they were inspired by the Jean Baudrillard text Simulacrum Simulation. We had to read this in grad school.
We
you
did,
know, this is,
I remember.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just a really influential and really just intellectual text. And I would encourage people to give it a shot, right? Why not? It's got some really interesting ideas in there. I have to reread it. And the Wachowskis also were super into Hong Kong cinema and martial arts cinema. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to kind of take all of these things that they had together and put them in one movie, you know? And yeah, pretty much, you know, cut to, they film The Matrix, they get Keanu Reeves to star, they make this whole big thing, they put it out in the world, and it's just absolutely a sensation. Do you remember when this movie came out?
I mean, who could forget? 1999, I must have been... I remember, I mean, one of the legacies, unfortunately, for the Matrix was its association with the Columbine shooting, right?
Oh, wow.
Do you remember?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, apparently, if I remember correctly, the shooters from the Columbine shooting loved this movie, but I think their style, those long jackets and stuff, was trying to replicate a little bit of The Matrix. Or at least that was the prevailing theory at the time. I don't know if that's been debunked or something, but I remember that was what was all over the news and stuff. And mind you, my dislike of the style of the fashion sense predated the Columbine shooting, though. I just want to point that out.
Wow.
I was ahead of the curve on that one. But yeah, I mean, I feel like when the movie came out, like, it felt so groundbreaking, right?
It did, yeah.
And invented slow-mo,
the bullet time. Bullet time, you know, seeing the bullet and, like, I mean, everything was making fun of it. I remember, like, the MTV Movie Awards, they were making fun of that, mm-hmm. you know, because I used to watch that. And
Scary
like,
movie.
Mm-hmm. And action movies were just not the same after it. Like, everyone just pretty much did it. But and it was interesting. Mm-hmm.
But that's what you want in a movie sometimes, right? Sometimes we're craving those moments of, like, what am I going to see that, like, changes a game? And that, the slow-mo time was it. And it sucks for the Wachowskis because, God, what an impact to make. And then the expectation then is like, ooh, what are you going to do next? And just like, what are you going to do next? Like, creators are lucky to create that once in a lifetime. You want us to do over and over again? That's, I think, ultimately why... I think that's part of the reason why the sequels just never resounded. Yeah.
Well, you know, you got to also kind of...
That's a
like
lot of
think,
pressure.
You got to think back to a time when there wasn't a film like this, and then you got this film. And what we can say, interestingly, about The Matrix is that it's Hollywood... You know, action-packed, mainstream kind of storytelling, but mixed in with, you know, really interesting ideas and telling a really new, interesting story. You know, Christopher Nolan described it as an incredibly palpable mainstream phenomenon that actually made people think, hey, what if this isn't real, right? And so people were just kind of like, wow, this is a popcorn movie, but this is also, like, really enthralling in, like, a, you know, like... and entering me into this new science fiction world and getting me thinking in different ways. So it's just like, for that, it was kind of groundbreaking. Yeah, bullet time and the action. It was just, also the action is really, really incredible. The stylization, you know, the costumes and everything were just so unique. You know, The color coding, which is a big part of the original. And
the philosophy.
And the philosophy. So it has all of that.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole red pill, blue pill thing. How that became pretty pervasive in society even to this day.
Mm-hmm.
I actually just saw, I think it was two Republicans tweeting about which pill do you take, the red or the blue? And I think, I want to say it was Trump's daughter, Ivanka, who was just like, blue always. And like, it's quickly followed up by one of the Wachowski sisters saying, fuck both of you.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, no, I mean, the you know, so if you don't remember, red pill, you see the truth. Blue pill, you see, you live content with life, right?
You stay ignorant, essentially, yeah.
Right, okay.
And you know, if you're listening to this episode and you haven't seen The Matrix, I'm pretty shocked that you pressed play on this episode, first of all. But like,
it's just like, I checked out though the Matrix Resurrections because it was on HBO Max for free, and that let's be real, that is a pretty compelling argument to like as to why you will check out a movie.
This
if it's
true.
Free, it's for me. I mean, we are entering the age where apparently movie studios think it's post pandemic, so. So I had to start going back in theaters. I'm just like, no, Matrix is the last one for major release to be released on HBO Max.
But yeah, essentially there's a character, Thomas Anderson, played by Keanu Reeves, who's visited by Morpheus, you know, who pretty much tells him that, you know, if you seek the truth, I will show you the truth, offers him the two pills. And when he takes the red pill, you know, he comes to find out that the world that he's living in is a simulation and that, you know, that he's actually living in a pod with a robotic bug in his stomach and his life is a lie and everything, you know, all that shit.
Yes, the robots have won, so...
The robots have won and is putting us all in simulated things where we, you know, are just... Why are they keeping us alive, though, is the
We question. Generate power for them.
Yeah, there you go.
We're batteries.
There you go. That's right. Thank you.
Why are they keeping... You know, that's a fair question because... You would think robots would have figured out another sustainable method of energy, but they're robots. What do they care about the sustainability of the earth?
Yeah. But it's even a stronger fuck you because if I remember of the story was man created AI technology, right? AI technology became,
our downfall
became a threat to man. And since they were working on using the energy of the sun to run, then I think they released all these nuclear bombs and covered the sky black. So they're like, okay, well, we'll take you as batteries.
Yes.
You want to fuck with us? We'll fuck with you.
Eddie is right. That is canon. That is the story. So that's why in the last movie, they get so excited when they see the sun for the first time, Trinity and Neo. Ugh.
Okay, I did not go back and rewatch Reloaded and Revelation, so I'm just like, okay, is that how it ends? So I can't remember.
I mean, I'll spoil it. Do you want me to spoil it? Do you remember? Did you watch him or no?
I watched them a long time ago.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm spoiling this. Trinity, played by Carrie Ann Moss, who is the love interest to Neo. She is, I don't know, a freedom fighter, I guess is what you could call her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's trying to bring down the Matrix and bring down the robots. And in the end, she and Neo fly a ship and crash it into the robot world. And Carrie Ann Moss goes on to have like the longest death scene. I'll never forget this because in the theater, I think at the 5-minute mark, I was like, oh my God, just die. I said that out loud. And people laughed around me and I felt like, oh my God, my life as a comedian. This is the origin story.
Okay, interesting. That happens in the later films. How much do we want to talk about? I mean, I guess for the Resurrections, we do need to kind of glance over some of the things happening.
I mean, kind of, sort of. I mean, the important things here is, all right, so Thomas Anderson discovers that he is Neo. Neo is the one who is supposed to restore balance in the Matrix or something. I don't know. Morpheus does a lot of BSing here, I feel. Making a lot of promises here. But Neo is one of the, I think he's the only person who could see the Matrix for what it is when he's freed, right? He sees the Matrix, he sees the code. So that's why he has all those cool powers. And he's pursued by Agent Smith, played by Hugo Weaving, who is probably one of the most memorable characters because, you know, he's just a guy in a suit, but like, you know, Hugo Weaving, talk about a performance here. He's so stoic, he's so creepy. I love it. Hugo Weaving is the man here. I think Hugo Weaving is easily one of my favorite things of this movie.
Yeah, he's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you know that other people that were gonna, you know, play this role was, well, obviously they pitched to Will Smith. He chose Wild Wild West over it.
Oh.
I'm sure he's happy with that. Jada Pinkett's in it though, which is funny. Nicolas Cage also turned it down.
Wait, they wanted Nicolas Cage as Neo?
Yeah.
That's bold. That's a different movie.
Yeah. Wachowskis really wanted Johnny Depp. And then but the studio pushed for Keanu Reeves. And they also almost got Leonardo DiCaprio to play the role, but ultimately he wanted to you know, really pick his next choice after Titanic, and he didn't want to do a visual effects film. He wanted to do something more organic, if you will.
Didn't he do the Man in the Iron Mask after Titanic?
Yeah, it's a costume drama.
Oh.
It's not visual effects or anything.
I don't know. It was still like an action movie.
I guess I never saw it.
Swashbuckling, you know?
Swashbuckling, yeah, that's fun, yeah. But it's not heavily VFX, I guess.
I suppose. He played the twin. There were two of them. I don't know. Okay.
you could portray twins without having to use VFX.
I guess. That's true. You can. I don't think at the time Parent Trap was doing that anymore. I think they were just going straight up digital.
That's Lindsay Lohan, yeah. We got Lawrence Fishburne as Morpheus, another, you know, great characterization and a role. Obviously, Carrie Ann Moss, Trinity, Hugo Weaving, Agent Smith, Joe Pantoliano as Cypher. You know, which I always forget about him because obviously he like isn't a thing in the later movies, but
right. Well, he dies. He was like a traitor.
Yeah, he was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I always forget. Yeah. About that role. So,
you make it sound like this movie's so forgettable, but
well, you know, for me, it is.
Okay.
For me, it is. I think that it's an interesting, idea. But it just doesn't work, and it's another one of those, the execution is off for me. I also just, I don't know, there's something really cold about this movie.
Okay, because you're the one who has argued that, like, you think film is more than story, right? And this
is,
and this movie is so much style.
No, it's so heavy story. It's like if you walk out to the bathroom and come back, you're going to be lost.
The stylization of this movie is also what I think what made this movie. I complain about the fashion sense of it, but it has a look. It has a style. It has a grace to it that, like,
so
I don't,
any film that has a stylization to it, I have to like.
I don't know. What about the bullet time?
Again, I think it's been, well, one, this isn't the Matrix's fault, but, you know, it's been, like, kind of so overdone and stuff. But that wasn't any, I don't know, for me, when I look at at film, I'm looking more so for choreography. I'm looking more for shot composure. This film, you know, relied so much on VFX and like, visual effects and like fast editing and all this stuff and like cool music and all this stuff that I couldn't connect to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know. And also, I've said this before on the podcast, at the end of the day, science fiction is just not my top and go-to genre. It's not one that, you know, I don't seek it out as much. Usually, if I engage with it, you know, I actually, when I really like it, it's always like, oh my God, I can't believe I liked it. Because I'm just more interested in, like, stories I can relate to. And that's just my personal preference. And my type of fantasy is musicals, westerns, those kind of things. So,
yeah.
All of that together, I think, is why I don't give a shit about The Matrix, you know? Which is interesting because I love Aliens so much. I think Aliens is great, but that's more so like it's about action. It's more action.
It's an action movie, and, you know, the science of the alien isn't that important.
Yeah.
It's not a hard science fiction. I think Alien is much more harder sci-fi because, you know, we're giving a little bit of explanation as to the back of the planet that they're visiting, as well as the science behind the xenomorph, according to Hal.
Yeah, and even like the bad guys in Aliens.
Hal? No, Mother. Mother. I'm sorry, Mother.
Mother. Yeah. but yeah, I really like it. But anyway, do you like The Matrix?
Yeah, I mean, I like The Matrix. I mean, you have said that like you think is one of those movies that's gonna like that's fall into obscurity.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you said, I think, in the cold open, right? I didn't imagine that.
Yeah.
Right?
No, I said that. Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that as I was walking home from the gym today, that The Matrix is one of those movies that like not many people really talk about anymore. Nope. And I think it was because I disagree with you that I don't think it's because of the sequels. I just think that so many replicas came out of it, like so many wannabes, that like it kind of, I don't know, maybe it oversaturated it.
You know, it's so interesting though, because I agree with you, yeah. And that's not even The Matrix's fault, but I will tell you one thing that is The Matrix's fault is the fact that they continued to tell this story and they overcomplicated it and therefore ruined the legacy of that original film that was so effective. I was listening to a podcast and Tarantino was talking about how a successful sequel will, when you think back on the story, right, of say whatever character it is, and a good example would be Frankenstein. They say Bride of Frankenstein is probably one of the best sequels ever made, and I would agree. When you think about Frankenstein, when you think about scenes from it, sometimes you're not even like, was that in the original Frankenstein or in Bride of Frankenstein? Like the old man, the blind man. Which film was that in? You can't tell them apart because both films are so important to telling the folklore and the story of Frankenstein and this monster. And that's a positive way, right? The whole Matrix story, when you look back at it and you can't tell in which film this happens or in what, you know, where this gets introduced, when you look back at it and it all kind of gets jumbled into one big Matrix story, I think that because the sequels are so bad, people look back at it in anger and like frustration, you know, of the overcomplicated mess that the whole story became. Because I don't know. I mean, maybe you guys disagree and maybe you think the sequels were pretty damn good. But I think that they were so bad in continuing this story that it did kind of overall ruin the quality. And when you look back at the original Matrix, you kind of pile them all into one big Matrix story. And the last two films effectively ruin the quality of the first one by association. You know, it's like it's the whole guilt by association thing. Right. That's how I feel.
Yeah, for me, the appeal of the original one, I don't disagree with you, right? I think the sequels were kind of garbage. I actually remember being mad at my father for taking me to see Revelations. That's the third one, right? Because I already did not like the second one. So I'm just like, why am I going to the theater to see this new one? But he wanted to go real bad. So I was just like, okay, fine. And I remember it was just like, I fought it. That's one of the movies that I wanted to walk out, did not have the balls to walk out yet.
Have you ever walked out of a movie?
Twice.
Which movies?
I haven't said this on the podcast. Okay, I'll tell it. Constantine, also starring Keanu Reeves.
Yes.
Interesting. And Little Nicky.
Oh, I don't remember this,
with
actually.
Adam Sandler.
So, yeah, look at that.
Those movies I found dreadful. And both times, I'll admit this, I was high. But I feel like Little Nicky is a movie that you should enjoy high. And the fact that I wanted to just walk out and gouge my eyes says something about it.
Look at that. The only movie I ever walked out of was Twilight.
Oh, no. Those are fighting words for Eddie.
Yeah, I just couldn't. I guess I just couldn't do it anymore.
Which Twilight? Which one?
New Moon.
First one?
New Moon.
New Moon?
Wait, is that the one with the baby?
No.
No, that's Breaking Dawn.
No, I don't know. I'm really that well, so okay.
I don't know. There's something. I just couldn't do it. I was just like, why am I continuing with this franchise?
Just classic.
You know it's gonna get remade and we're gonna have to cover it one day.
Oh god. Hopefully I'll be dead by then.
Interesting fact. So the Wachowskis, when the initial Matrix came out, they were known as the Wachowski brothers. And since the release of the Matrix trilogy, they transitioned to female. Lily was the first, and the reason she came out, can you believe this, is because a reporter from Daily Mail came to her door saying, it's like, we're going to expose you. So she had to come out before she was even ready. Can you fucking believe?
Fucked up. That's
how
terrible.
Foul is that? And then, so I remember, I actually didn't, it's not, this wasn't news that like made it. I don't feel like it made it necessarily like, you know, to like the press really. I think it was like kind of like a silent coming out almost, but I remember Netflix was about to release a show called Sense8, and they were referred to as the Wachowski siblings. And I was like, siblings? I thought they were brothers. I was like, is this like some, are they trying to be PC and like not like any gender? But then I looked it up and was like, oh my God, one of the siblings transitioned to female. So that was interesting. And maybe a couple years later, after the release of the OA, of the Sense8, was when Lana also transitioned to female. So now they're the Wachowski sisters. Lily was first.
Really? I thought it was Lana that was first.
I'm pretty sure it's Lily. Let me just double check that. Oh, you're right. Lana was the first sibling to transition. Okay, sorry. She transitioned in 2012. Okay, and then it was Lily. Okay, my bad. What? Siblings. They both have L's. Like, you know, I mean, I was just talking about this with Eddie and his like nephews with two J's. I'm just like, how am I supposed to differentiate? But anyway, Lily, she is not involved with the new Matrix movie, but she has actually gone on record to talk about how the original Matrix is a trans, or the original trilogy was a trans allegory. And that's interesting, right? Like, I want to link in the show notes to articles that kind of talk about how the trans community has related to the Matrix. And it's this idea of like this double life living, right? Kind of like when you're in the Matrix, right? Like, you're who the world is telling you to be. And then when you wake up, you're somebody new. You're in your real body. And the trans community really related to that idea. That's what being trans is kind of like. So yeah. As members of the LGBTQ community, like I think I've said this on the podcast before, but the trans experience is obviously something I can never relate to. I just could never put myself in that.
Yeah.
The vitriol that people absolute fear for your life, right? Like, even as a gay man, like, it's so much worse for like a trans person.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and their voices are just starting to be heard, and they're often not either taken seriously mm-hmm. or completely misunderstood. And, you know, and like the platforms that they've been given is such a new thing. So I guess I would encourage people to listen and keep an open mind more than anything. But yeah, of course, we can't speak to these things. You know what's interesting, though, about the original Matrix, not Reloaded or Revelations, is that some part of the movie, and I'll say maybe the first half, there is a lot of playing room where you can read a lot of different interpretations from it. You know, I do accept that from her. You know, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense. You know, yeah. I guess for me, and also where the Matrix kind of falls apart, is when they give a definitive answer as to why we're living in a simulation. The nice thing about the text that this is based on, the Jean Baudrillard thing, is that there is no answer, you know, and there is no, and there is no escape, and there is no rescue. It just, it kind of like, and some people like this, which is fine, but it, it gives, it turns it into just kind of like a, you know, like, oh, here's a goal and we got to defeat the bad guy. Like, kind of like a simple kind of story. Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea of it is so grand that putting behind it like this whole like, oh, robots took over the world kind of basic Hollywood story kind of ruins how interesting the overall idea is. So that's one of the great things about The Matrix, is that at the beginning, it does set up all these different, like, oh, the ideas are so interesting that so many different readings can be on it. But then the movie ruins itself by it being, no, actually, robots just took over the world.
Well, yeah, you know? But they got to make it, I mean, you know.
Do they have to?
The studios, I don't feel like the studios would allow without, like, a good, clean-cut bad guy. Like, all right, why? The people want to know. So, yeah, so it's like, robots.
Well, that's the thing. People, and that's the thing, that that's actually a quote from the newer film, is that people need comfort and need answers and need things, you know, they need to be, like, wrapped in a blanket and stuff. And it sucks because it's, like, I being thrown into art, into films that don't give me that. You know, actually, The Lost Daughter that I just watched made me feel really uneasy. And I really like that because I don't want answers. I don't want everything wrapped up in a nice little bow tie for me, you know? So I think that's why I also don't like The Matrix, is because it's too kind of ABC. Connect the dots.
I mean, am people. I don't need everything wrapped up in a nice, neat blanket, but I need logic. I need some sort of semblance of, like, sense in this world. I don't know if we're just living in a matrix. I need an answer, just like, why? I don't care what the answer is. I'm just saying,
that's also like asking, what's the meaning of life? You're never gonna get the fucking answer to that. So why would you answer
if a movie's about the meaning of life, give me a fucking answer. I don't care if the answer is like, I don't care if the answer is like three. You know, like,
I want
an answer.
All right.
If the movie is attempting to, like, give me that.
We're kind of tiptoeing into it. I say let's just dive into the waters of the Matrix Resurrections now.
Let's go. Matrix Resurrections. This movie has been whispered about for several years. And I think both siblings directed Jupiter Ascending, right? Okay. So both siblings, I think they were siblings at the time. We're working, you know, doing press release for Jupiter Ascending, which is a movie that starred Channing Tatum and, what's her name? From that 70s show, Mila Kunis.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. This movie flopped hard, right? But it was an original sci-fi epic. And, you know, those are few and far between, to be quite honest, if they're not a franchise. And obviously the question that the Wachowski siblings were constantly getting were, are you ever returning to The Matrix? And the Wachowski siblings were like, disgusted by this question, because they actually do not like the idea of returning to franchises. All right. Well, it turns out the studio was just like, well, we don't need the Wachowskis. We're going to proceed without. And they were going to proceed on a movie without them. I think Michael B. Jordan was actually tapped to be the new lead. Mm-hmm. What happened was the Wachowski, Lana, she got herself back into the picture. And I guess her mindset here is just like, all right, if the studio is going to go without my consent, I might as well, you know, you might as well join and try to have some control over your creation. I understand this. Like,
if you
know,
can't beat him, join him. Yeah,
exactly. So this is ultimately how we got the Matrix Resurrections. I want to say that Keanu Reeves joined before Lana Wachowski did, right? Let me just double check that.
Yeah, he was always down for a new movie. And I think even Carrie Ann Moss was too.
Which, how? Carrie Ann Moss died in the third.
I mean, didn't everyone die?
I mean, technically, I guess Neo was left questionable.
I see.
I think we saw him at the very end, right? Like, after the robots go away and stuff. So Lana Wachowski, it was in 2019 where Lana Wachowski returned as a sole director, and Reeves and Carrie Ann Moss were confirmed to reprise the role. So this all came in 2019, which I guess his movie was filmed probably during the pandemic also.
Wow. Yeah. I think that, yeah, after they apparently Wachowski was thinking of just leaving, abandoning the project because of COVID, interrupting the filming. But they were like, come on, no, we got to resume filming and finish this. And
we have to. The studio demands it. The movie was written by Lana Wachowski, David Mitchell, and Alexander Herman. They have writing credits. I've said this before on the podcast, right? When it's like, I think usually when more than, I think when four writers is just like, that's too many. That means that there were more. But three, I think, is also still pushing it, in my opinion.
I think so too.
But yeah, this is how we have now The Matrix. Now, The Matrix was it always supposed to come out in 2021? Or was it supposed to come out?
I think because they were filming in 2020, there was never like a set date. So I think it was at some point it was always supposed to come out in 2021. Yeah.
I think it's a bold choice to release it during the pandemic, but it's because it's weird. The movies that came out on HBO Max have been called flops in the box office, but like they're also being released simultaneously on HBO Max. So it's just like, I don't know how that metric works.
Yeah, me neither. It's just a bad time right now for anyone who's not Spider-Man. And I do think that although it's got more than 100 million in the box office, it's still underperforming.
What, Spider-Man?
No, The Matrix.
Oh.
Spider-Man's the biggest hit ever. You want to hear a funny story? So I forgot what movie it was that I went to go see at the theater. But I kept seeing the Matrix trailer in front of it. I was like, man, they're really fucking pushing this movie. Every movie I'm seeing in the theater is before it. And one movie, I think it might have been Ghostbusters or something, that the trailer was playing ahead. There was like this moment where it's like the big reveal, like, oh, Keanu Reeves, this is the Matrix trailer. And a kid in the audience goes, is that John Wick? And that just, it was so interesting because I was like, oh, right. Yeah, no, we're in a new era. This isn't Neo anymore. This is John Wick. The Matrix not watched. Like we said too, like you said, nobody talks about it, right? And people now look at Keanu Reeves, especially because he had the John Wick hairdo and the facial hair, but he needs it or else he's just gonna look wrinkly. But you know, he's
older.
But it's interesting.
I like the beard on him.
Yeah, no, he looks good. I mean, he's an attractive guy. Resurrections is fitting because I think, after all, they are just trying to resurrect the reputation and the
franchise.
The franchise as a whole, you know, for the new generation.
Yeah. So I just found out. So the movie was supposed to come out in May of 2021, same time as apparently John Wick Chapter 4. But because of COVID, it was postponed and kept getting postponed ultimately to December 22nd.
Yeah, I don't know. That Christmas, I know, like, people, like, historically is always a moneymaker, but, like, you kind of have to think differently in terms of pandemic and
I guess.
Stuff,
I was going to say, like, yeah, I thought Christmas blockbusters were a thing, like, you know.
And yet, here we are, Nightmare Alley completely bombed.
Well, I was, yeah, but, like, so, I don't think the movies really anticipated Spider-Man to be as big as it was. And
yeah,
that came out that came out December. Like that kind of just like really gobbled up everything. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It was an event. What can we say?
It's getting people out into the theaters and that's what matters. So.
And yeah. And that money that Disney's making will help feed all those tiny, you know, Fox Searchlight productions.
Fingers crossed.
That's how Hollywood works.
So how do we sum up what The Matrix Resurrections is about without getting into the weeds? Because this is so overly complicated that I don't even know if I want to go, you know,
I could summarize it this way. The Matrix is about, the original Matrix is about our relationship with the internet, right? And The Matrix Resurrections is the internet's relationship with us. Does that make sense? So in Matrix, we are entering it like we're keep in mind, like the 90s, like we are all going online for the first time, right? Wild Wild West. It seems cool. It seems like we could take on new personalities, new identities. Literally, we do that when we enter the Matrix.
Yes.
Matrix Resurrections is all about the Matrix itself, how it controls us, how these algorithms like Facebook and Google, they know everything about us now. Like we are owned by the internet. That is what Matrix Resurrections is
Resurrections,
about.
Resurrections, yeah.
In a nutshell.
I guess.
That is thematically what it's about. From a storyline point of view, Neo was dead for 60 years. No one knew where he was, but people were still searching for him in Zion because, I don't know, the war, I guess, never ended. And surprise, surprise, it turns out that there is a new Matrix that is a power source, and it involves both Neo and Trinity, who is alive. I think that's a pretty decent summary without spoiling too much.
That's all we need to say, yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently Morpheus died, but they like took his soul and they turned it into a program thing.
Okay, so yes, Morpheus died because it's been 60 years into the future.
Yeah,
Morpheus right? died. But Neo wrote the code of Morpheus, the Morpheus that he knows, because Neo is a part of the Matrix. He can see the Matrix, so he can write code. And he therefore resurrected a version of Morpheus. So it's not technically Morpheus, it's...
He did a combination.
It's like kind of
He wrote and developed an AI with kind of the personality of Morpheus and also of Smith, Agent Smith.
Yes, right.
He made
that's
a combination.
Right. Of that's right.
Two. So what you have a Morpheus that's a little more wacky in that sense,
flamboyant,
which was great because it added, you know,
it's flair.
It's not this particular actor whose name eludes
me. Lawrence Fishburne.
No, the one that plays him now, Morpheus.
Oh, right. I don't. The actor who plays him now is hang on.
Yeah, Abdul.
I actually don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't pronounce it. I wasn't gonna destroy it. So. Yeah, so you have this. He's not doing the exact style of the original Morpheus. It has a twist here. So the whole idea is that, I mean, it's that Neo wanted to wake up again. And he created another Morpheus to help him in that process.
Yeah, so we should say that he's back to being Thomas Anderson. This new, you know, he didn't die. They didn't save the fucking world. Robots got him again, put him back in a pod, and keep feeding him. Make sure that he continuously chooses blue pills over and over again. But right. He has these memories of the Matrix, and in his life, he turned it into a video game. And
right.
He's famous, and he's thriving, you know, which is why he was able to code, you know, Ms. Smith and all this stuff. But, you know, Trinity's also there, and he keeps seeing her, and he's like, I feel like there's something deep down inside of me, but he's being repressed so heavily by the Matrix and these blue pills that he's getting that he's not able to connect until people from, you know, the real world come and save him. So that's mm-hmm. what's going on. So that's how the film begins, and then essentially the second half of the film is the first film all fucking over again in little ways. But, you know, when I was watching it at first, I was like, is this an alternate reality that's like, what if he never took the red pill and he took the blue pill? You know, I watched it with my brother-in-law, and that's what we thought. We were like, is this what's going on? Is this depicting an alternate reality? And mm-hmm. at first I was getting with it. And then the rest of the movie happened. And so just tell me, what did you think about this movie?
Okay, I kept pausing you. I had to watch it in chunks because I was just like, what the fuck is happening here?
I had to do a lot of explaining for him.
Eddie had to hold my hand throughout this whole thing. I was just like, how are you getting this? Like, where? Like, I saw the original three. I've seen the Animatrix. Like, how am I having such a hard time grasping this at times? I think at a certain point, I just had to turn off my mind and just be like, I'm just and try to enjoy this ride.
I thought this was highly disappointing. I actually wrote a few notes that I just wanted to go over because I am once again insulted, and these are the reasons why I am. Now, of course, I am not a Matrix fan, so
as you're watching this, I've never been so insulted in my entire life.
Well, we should be insulted because they think that, you know, they can be self-aware but feed the same shit down our throats and we're going to be fine with it. Because at least it's self-aware and it's jaded just like us. Like, no, go fuck yourself. So,
it was super jaded, though, but...
It was. And it's also like, don't tell me I'm jaded. Like, fuck
this was
you.
It was a very cynical movie.
Yeah, it was. Okay, so anyway. One, they didn't create anything new. They just repeated the same exact movie. Like, it's effective in 1999 when you see him wake up from the pod and he disconnects and he realizes what the real world is. It's redundant when you see it again in 2021 in this new film. Why are we seeing this again? Why is he waking up all over again? It's not effective. I've seen this crap. It does not. It doesn't hit me the same way it does before.
Yes.
Two, this is an action movie. What fucking action was there in this movie? How many times did I see Keanu Reeves just put up his hands and deflect bullets and that was called action? God.
Thank you for saying that. I was so mad. I'm just like, where is the kung fu? Like, Keanu Reeves is John Wick now. He can do action. Like, we have the stunt coordinations and CGI to like make him do action. The whole film is Keanu, like the third act is all Keanu Reeves just fucking holding his hands up and just deflecting bullets for like a half hour.
Seriously.
And I was just like, oh, is this... He's going to do something, right? Like, something must happen.
And
nothing.
That's the thing. Like, oh, my God, there's a new Matrix movie. Those action scenes are going to be dynamite. You will be disappointed by the lack of action scenes in this movie. You signed up for an action movie. It did not deliver. Two, color grading and color temperature were so vital and important to the first Matrix. When you were in the Matrix and when you were out of it, the color temperature told you everything you needed to know to feel the difference between the way that the real world and the Matrix felt, right? That was not present here. You cannot tell the difference between the real world and the Matrix. There was no color grading. Like, you know how the Matrix was kind of gray and cold and all of that? Not present here, right?
Mm-hmm.
Another thing, too, we're getting hit all over the fucking head that he's living in a blue pill world, down to the therapist's pill glasses and everything. We're getting hit over the head with blue, and yet, when Bugs comes, which is another fucking Warner Brothers reference, fuck you, Warner Brothers. Bugs comes.
Warner Brothers.
Her hair is blue. Why is
her hair
blue? It's
competing with Disney.
What, they're not holding a fucking candle. Because at least Disney isn't doing this self-aware bullshit. Why is her hair blue? She's supposed to be the way out. She's not part of the problem. She's the release from it. Okay, fine. You don't want to make her hair red. At least make it fucking green, not blue. Like, are you not thinking?
That's a valid point. I didn't think about that while watching the movie, but okay.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, colors, you know, color to tell a story and all this stuff. And the only color they used, and they fucking misused it.
Can I? I just want to point out something, though, real quick with Bugs. I found it interesting that Neo would follow the hot chick, but he did not follow the black man. I'm just going to say that. Just going to say it.
I'm all glad. Right? Thank you for...
Neo's racist is what I'm saying. Or Thomas Anderson is, at least.
This film just tried so hard to give us, you know, what we wanted from, like, they were, like, trying to give us so much of the original 1999 film that they even resorted to projecting it into the wall of the fucking movie. It's like, well, we just know that all you want to see is a 1999 Matrix, so here it is on the walls. Like, this is what you want, and we're trying so desperately to give that to you. Remixed in a weird fucking way, and it's not working. I also can't stand it when it's like almost like you gotta wait. It's like the drum roll, and then a character turns around. It's like, I hate that name. I am Trinity. Like, I can't fucking stand this trope
in these Hollywood movies
anymore. Yeah. Where it's just like, you know, it's like build up, silence, and then it's like, I'm Trinity. I just can't. Yeah, I mean, this movie, you know, we said it. I really
went at it.
It started up here, and as the movie went on, it just kept going down and down. And the longer the movie went on, the worse it got. And by the end of it, I was angry because it was getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
The Matrix, and the big thing that I wrote was that the Matrix had something unique to actually kind of do and say in 1999. But by 2021, it's repetitive, it's redundant, and it's ineffective. And also, why does everyone in this new Matrix look like scene kids from the 90s? Okay, I get why they looked that way in the 90s, but it's 2021. Like, why does everyone who's in the real world that escaped the Matrix, like, why do they have to look like fucking, again, like, I don't even want to call them hipsters. I call them scene kids from the 90s. Like, I just don't think the aesthetics are.
You're talking about the I.O.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 60 years and fashion hasn't changed. I guess seriously. When we're all living underground, though, how much time is there for fashion to change?
So
I think a little.
Lackluster action, not competent color storytelling, right? And just not even an original story. And also, what even was the fucking plot to this movie? I mean, seriously, like, oh, that's the whole movie is saving Trinity, but why does she need to be saved? You know, how do they even control the Matrix? What's the power dynamic here? Just none of it made any fucking sense. And yeah, you could, like, the movie does kind of explain some things, but not well enough for, I guess, me to give a shit and be like, oh, okay, well, then, yeah, this was a good movie, because no, I can't feel it.
Can I read you a tweet that I tweeted out last night while I was watching the movie?
Yes, please.
All right, it goes.
Did you do it on our Remix podcast? Or
I did yours? A similar one on the Remix podcast. I retweeted it, but this was I just tweeted it on mine. Follow me, guys. Rolando at Rolando underscore Nieves, or the podcast at Remix Pod. Usually we'll tweet and I'll retweet. Anyway, ready? Why do the exiles from the Matrix Resurrections look like rejected Lost Boys from Hook?
We had the same thought process, but I went 90 scene kids and you went rejected Lost Boys from Hook.
They were, it was so terrible. Those, the exile applications, right? They were just like, I was like, what the fuck? Why? These
can
outfits
you
are so silly.
Send that to me via text so I can share that with my brother-in-law.
Sure. I could definitely do that. I mean, Eddie explained to me exactly why, right? They're supposed to be savages. Again, Eddie did a lot of hand-holding here. Give props to Eddie.
Thank you.
Props to Eddie for seeing the positives and things where, you know, we don't, because it's just really hard for me to look at this film as a job well done, I guess I would say.
It's a job done, I think. I didn't hate it as much as like you did, because you really came for it.
I did.
Because
there's one positive thing I will say.
Oh, what is yours?
It's Christina Ricci.
Her one minute cameo.
I had to tell that to Rolando. I said, that's Christina Ricci. Yeah,
and I was like, no, it's not.
Yep.
What are you talking about?
She was hot, yeah. But all that self-aware bullshit about like, oh, making another Matrix and all that shit, I just, don't insult me. That's why I was insulted, because it was like, honestly, go fuck yourself.
Right. So, yeah, I don't disagree with you, right? But I think for me, the movie, the reason it's just okay is ultimately because, I don't know, I guess, this might be an unpopular opinion, but performance wise, Neil Patrick Harris on this one kind of did a lot of heavy lifting.
He did.
I think to the point where it's just like, okay. And that, I'm not saying the movie's good here. I'm just saying it's just like, all right. Like that expo dump, he did a lot of work to make that expo dump both an exposition dump and actually still make it like a fun character to see. That's a tightrope walk if ever there is one.
Yeah.
I like the new Morpheus, for example. I actually liked I was actually mixed on new Agent Smith because Hugo Weaving is so Hugo Weaving.
Yeah.
Jonathan Groff, not necessarily the most intimidating, but he did have a way to carry himself that was douchey, which would fit in with like kind of, because keep in mind, The first Matrix, right, is set in the 90s. This one is very much set in the present. Same, right? Like the Matrix world. Which is why I think that douchey character works a little bit better for that one.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. I told Eddie that I thought it should have been cast by Matt Bomer. Was my who I would have gone with, because of that line where he's just like, can I be even more perfect? Maybe I'm too perfect, my piercing blue eyes. And it's just like, well, Matt Bomer has more piercing blue eyes, sir. So
I think the biggest irony of all of the movie is the Niobe character, because she's supposed to be like in the real world and she's supposed to have like aged, and yet she's the most clearly CGI'd moment of the film, where you just look at her and all you see is computer effects. So it's just like, wow, even the real thing just feels terribly fake and
ooh,
simulated.
That's interesting that you think that. She was actually that was actual prosthetics though.
Yeah, but they also, you know, that they added,
I mean, I guess they enhanced it a little bit, but it was still prosthetic work that they put on her.
Oh well, it felt
it took 5 hours to apply fake Smith's prosthetic makeup to create the appearance of her character that aged 60 years.
But they don't know that black don't crack. See what I mean?
I mean, it's true. Jada Pinkett Smith looks phenomenal awesome. For her age.
It would have been interesting if Will Smith would have taken the Neo character, and they had to, and they this happened. You know, it would have been like her.
Yeah, true. Her husband. I mean, this movie had some like I enjoyed Neil Patrick Harris. You know, I'll give it to Jonathan Groff for trying to make the role his own.
Yeah, I mean that's all you could. Sometimes that's all you can do, right? Like,
yeah, that is all you can do.
You got to try to make it your own character. And that's he was able to give me Smith's delivery, while still trying to be his own iteration.
True. I just want to say one thing. You know, for the longest time, the Wachowskis were like, no, 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 we don't want to do it. We don't want to do it. Now, of course, they were kind of forced into it because they were like, well, if you can't beat him, join him. But also,
yeah, because one brother was like, we'll do it without you. And they're like, well, at least Lana's just like, well, all right, I guess if you're going to do it, I might as well have some say.
Yeah, but there's a quote that I want to read by Lana Wachowski as to why she really felt like she wanted to revisit it. They lost their parents in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
So Lana, quote, I couldn't have my mom and dad, yet suddenly I had Neo and Trinity, arguably the two most important characters in my life. It was immediately comforting to have these two characters alive again, and it's super simple. You could look at it and say, okay, these two people die, and okay, bring these two people back to life, and doesn't that feel good? Well, yes, it did. This is what art does, and this is what story does. They comfort us, and they're important. So the reason she did it is for comfort, you know, for this whole idea of resurrections, you know, is really personal for her. And, you know, and that's also why at the end of the day, it's like this love story and this longing for people to be reborn and to see each other again. And that's a really interesting theory. And I do agree that this is what art does. And that's what the beauty of art does. You know, like that's why Fellini's 8.5 is the greatest ending to a movie ever, because it realizes the importance that art kind of like bridges between our personal lives and between art. But I don't know if it completely worked as a film for me. I don't know. That quote, although it's touching and I agree with the overall statement of what art does, I don't know if that tells me on whether or not this was needed.
Yeah, I think that's fair because, I mean, performances aside, I could agree with you. I don't think this was needed either. I was just like, because by the time it was over, it made me, outside of the question, I'm just like, wait, Trinity is now the one? I guess is kind of where I left off.
Yeah.
Very confused and kind of defeats the whole Neo one.
Yeah, seriously.
And literally one, mind you. Yeah. But I kind of made me want to revisit again The Matrix because, you know, The Matrix was so cool. But also at the same time, maybe not because I don't know.
Well,
I like The Matrix because I like the memory of The Matrix. I like the memory. Oh, that's it. I like the memory of The Matrix. I like The Matrix of The Matrix because,
there you go.
You know, that feeling when you see those slow guns, slow bullets for the first time.
Bullet time, yeah.
I will never. It's so hard for me to remember moments like that in cinema. They're so hard because like we've had cinema for over 100 years. Like a lot of it has been done before. And even though there's a CGI, that was a practical effect. No, not practical. That was a CGI effect, obviously. But I think the shots of like Carrie-Anne Moss like jumping and like the spinning of the camera, that's like camera work and CGI, right? Like that's like multiple cameras like taking the, like we see that now on the red carpet.
Yeah, yes. We, you know what I mean? Yeah. Jeez, yeah.
So, but look at that. From The Matrix to the red carpet, you know?
But, you know, it's interesting because we always ask, was this needed? And, you know, I think we can agree for sure that it wasn't. But we sometimes ask, well, who is this film for? You know, why did it happen? And it really makes me think of that kid in the movie theater that said, oh, is that John Wick? Because I do think that a big intention of this was to, you know, have The Matrix kind of be a reigning franchise that could, you know, be on top once again. But watching the film, it became, you needed Eddie to hold your hand, and I needed my brother-in-law to help me out with things that I didn't, because there's no way I was rewatching those movies. I'm sorry.
Wow.
As much as I love this podcast, there's
way to do your work here for the pod.
Not Reloaded and Revelations. I'll rewatch the first one.
That wouldn't have been necessary.
But that's the thing. You actually do kind of need to know what happened in those films to enjoy this film. So it's not like you can pick this film up and get what's going. Like, I thought that this film would be like a one-off. Mm-hmm. Or I was actually hoping it was going to retcon, but it didn't. And it very much relies on the folklore and the mythology established in the other films. So you need to be a Matrix fan to get this film or to really appreciate this film. But then it's like, did Matrix fans want this film? Were Matrix fans asking for this film? I don't think so. I think they're all pretty devastated. Most of them are pretty devastated that the other two films fucking happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. So what's going to fix that? A fourth film is certainly not going to do it. So truly, who the fuck was this for? And who this was for was Warner Brothers. That's all.
Is Jada Pinkett Jada Pinkett Smith is bisexual, right?
Yeah.
I only bring that up just because I want to point out, though, I will say this. A lot of LGBTQ actors were involved in this film, specifically. Jada Pinkett Smith, Neil Patrick Harris, Jonathan Groff.
Mm-hmm. Who's Bugs a member?
Oh, you know what? Good question. Who? Let's see. I mean, maybe.
I mean, one thing I will say is that movie got me thinking, can I rock blue hair? Because she's making it look good.
Maybe.
You Jessica, probably could.
I like your the complexion. May do it.
Oh, thank you.
And also, half the cast of Sense 8 was in it, too. Which also, I was very happy with.
Oh, that's cute.
Jessica Henwick. All that comes up. Oh. Fans assume Jessica Henwick is a lesbian in real life.
They just assume.
They just assume it. I get it. She hangs out a lot with Kristen Stewart, apparently.
And she's Queen Bee at this moment, so.
Also, there was a performance here by Nick Jonas's wife, Priyanka Chopra, who I don't know who she is. So there you go. But it showed up on my Wikipedia as like Priyanka Chopra Jonas. I'm like, Jonas? I'm like, the Jonas Brothers? I click it like, oh shit, yeah, she's married. But there you go. So I don't know. So who was it made for? I guess the LGBTQ actors that need work.
I said for Warner Brothers, but that's a real positive spin on that.
I'll say that. Like, at least, I mean, the Wachowskis, I mean, Sense8 is one of my favorite Wachowski properties because that is undoubtedly a queer show. Like, it's not necessarily about the queer experience, but it is a very queer show, and that one is all over the spectrum, right? And I appreciate, I guess, maybe we watched Jupiter Ascending, right? It was not a good movie, but I will say this, it was an original story that they tried to tell. And maybe that's what the Wachowskis need to keep doing. It's just like their own original stuff. But I think they're just like, they're going to be forever entrenched with this Matrix franchise. And I think that's going to be, that might be their downfall.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. But that's what we think. What do you guys think? We want to hear your opinions as always. So email us remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com. We're on Twitter where you can see Rolando's fabulous tweets @remakespodcast. You can find us on facebook.com/remakesrebootsrevivals. We have a YouTube, Remakes Reboots Revivals, and we are highly active on Instagram where we do a lot of polls and audience engagement. And you can participate there @remakesrebootsrevivals. And also, last but not least, if you want to have your voice heard, literally, you should call our hotline. What's that number, Rolando?
That number is 862-248-2326. That's 862-248-2326.
Okay, well, you know, Matrix got resurrected and, you know, now it's time to bury it. So,
yeah. It's no Jesus.
I don't know why that struck me as so funny. Yes, no, it is no Jesus. So yes.
Sometimes I have them.
But yeah, thank you for.
Oh, there you go. That's the episode title right there.
It's no Jesus.
No Jesus.
Yeah, thank you for making it all the way to the end of this episode. We'll see you next week, where we'll be going back to HBO Max for a special episode.
Yo, HBO Max, they need to like give us some money, you know?
Them and Disney Plus, man.
Yeah, I mean, well, hey, I guess there's, they know what people want, right? They just give them the same shit over and over again.
Yeah, seriously. Well, I mean, actually, no, because that's what they were trying to say in this movie. And, you know, I enjoyed The Lost Daughter. I enjoyed The Lost Daughter, a completely original story based on a novel, but still.
An Is original it on HBO film Max?
Better than this. It's on Netflix.
Okay. Isn't that HBO Max?
Well, I'm just saying, they're saying that they know what people want, and I'm saying that's not what I want.
Oh, yeah. Well, I feel like you're in the minority here.
I don't think so. You know,
Spider-Man
guys,
is the biggest box office like success.
That's great, story. But it's not like people don't want original content. They where's the balance? There's
the people
no balance.
Have spoken. The people have spoken.
Please call in and let us know if you're like me and you like a good balance of stuff, or if you just want what HBO Max thinks you want and told you what you want in this new version of The Matrix. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Let us know. And until next time, stay unoriginal.